Dermot and Dave. Conversation, crack, and the music you love. Today FM. It all happens here. Today
FM. So ADHD is something that we've often heard about, and we hear it being diagnosed in children, but actually in recent years, more and more adults are finding that the problems they've had since their youth has been caused by a diagnosis being missed. In fact, some parents are finding themselves being diagnosed after bringing their own kids for assessment. But what is ADHD and what happens when you're diagnosed as an adult? Well, this morning we're joined by two people. One is ADHD Ireland CEO Ken Kilbride, and Mairead Deevy, who was herself diagnosed as an adult, is in studio with us this morning. Hello, Mairead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Get in nice and close to that microphone. We don't want to miss anything that you're going to tell us today. How did you end up with an ADHD diagnosis, and what age were you when it happened?
Yeah, so I think I ended up with it in adulthood the same way that a lot of people who don't get diagnosed until they're late do. I was 28, and at that stage, I'd sort of been around the houses. You know, I had been told it was anxiety. At one stage, there was a suggestion it was depression.
And what kind of things were you experiencing, you know, that you obviously went to seek help and get people's advice? So what things were you experiencing in your life?
So I think there's a mixture of things, because what I would say is that it very seldom travels alone. But the major problems would have started when I was in college, and it would have just been around, I guess, like being on time, getting my work done, time management, procrastination, all that sort of thing. And I think that it was probably missed when I was in school because of the fact that I had a lot of structure and routine. My parents were teachers and I was bright as well. And the thing about ADHD is people have this perception that it is this childhood sort of disorder and that it's to do with hyperactivity. But actually, there are three different ways that it presents, inattentive being the other type, and then there's combined. And women in particular tend to be the inattentive type. So I wasn't causing any trouble in school, but I was daydreaming, looking out the window, and it was missed. But
okay, so the hyperactivity side, the traditional one that we all kind of think is a stereotype, the kid who can't sit still and is always in trouble because he's knocking over desks or doing whatever because that's the hyperactivity.
Yeah.
But there's two other types, inattentive and then a combination of both.
And it is a generalization to say that, you know, in girls it is primarily inattentive, but that is what we tend to see.
And how do you know, and excuse me, you know, if this seems like a silly question, but how do you know you're just not just the daydreamy type?
Well, you don't. I mean, I suppose things have come on a long way, even in 10 years. Nobody would have sort of looked at me and sort of said there's anything particularly wrong. But then
And you wouldn't have been the first, you know, university student to procrastinate.
Exactly. You know? And so, you know, I'm not a clinician, so, you know, I suppose I have to be careful. But what I know is that when they diagnose, they look at it in three areas. They talk about work, relationships, and then home life. And it's sort of like the degree to which it's impairing you. So, you know, you hear people say everyone's a bit ADHD, and certainly in our modern times, you know, we're all very distracted. But it's when it's impairing your life to a very significant degree across all arenas, and crucially that it's been present since childhood. So they look back and
say... Okay, and you mentioned relationships there. So how would it manifest, and how would it have a detrimental impact on those?
So I think, for girls, we tend to be able to pick up a lot from our environment. So while I would have been aware growing up, perhaps that, like, maybe socially, emotionally, I was a little bit behind my peers, I think that females, we tend to kind of pick up what others are doing and to mask. So for me, the relationship part was probably okay. In later years, when alcohol was involved, I would have noticed a lot of impulsivity. So, you know, maybe blurting things out and lights out.
Yeah.
And that can cause a lot of issues, you know, and people, you know, fairly make assumptions that, you know, you just can't kind of keep their confidences in. And all of that then, I guess, kind of plays in your self-esteem, because you know you're not that kind of person, but you've just got this, you can't keep it in.
Yeah. So then from your journey then, at what point, when you were 28 and you were diagnosed, what had brought you to that diagnosis? Like the kind of the the months before that? How did you get to that diagnosis and clarity?
So and this is the reason I agreed to come on today. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I heard it on the radio or I read an article or something like that. And all of a sudden the penny dropped, because when I had gone into doctors and looking back, it was always around these kind of pain points. You know, maybe exams were coming up. I couldn't get myself together. I couldn't study. And I would kind of go into a really, you know, period of low mood. And I always had the sense of, we're putting the cart before the horse. Yes, I am anxious. And yes, my mood is a bit low, but there's something missing. And I think I read about it on the internet or in an article, and it was like, I can remember it and just feeling like I was going to fall off my chair. And it was this moment of, it's not that I can't study or I can't do the things I need to do because I'm sad. I'm sad and I'm worried because I can't do those things.
Okay.
And so it was just this complete light bulb moment for me.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so what was it like then when you got the, you know, the official diagnosis? Was it relief, or was it... did you then start to go, oh, and look back at your whole life differently now through a different filter?
It was a bit of both. There was definitely a huge relief, though I will say, and Ken will talk about this more, it takes so long to get a diagnosis in Ireland that I probably had sort of, you know, gone through the relief stage by the time I got the diagnosis. But there was also a lot of grief. And I think this is very common for people who are diagnosed late in life, that, you know, okay, there could be worse sort of things, you know, that happen. And really, I don't see ADHD as a disorder, but it is a disorder if you don't know about it. So you look back at 28 years of life. I mean, like, I've done okay. You know, I got myself through college. You know, I'm doing fine.
You're a junior barrister now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a barrister now. And again, you know, I really kind of had to grapple with, am I going to come on today and kind of talk about this? Mm. Because it's not really a profession, you know, where you want to be shouting from the rooftops. But, you know, it's really just that if somebody else heard it, that they would kind of think, you know, yeah, that sounds familiar. But yeah, I would say grief. There was a lot of grief around it about the fact that it hadn't been spotted.
And what grief, in what sense? That you maybe, I don't know, would have acted differently or had a different attitude towards yourself? Or was it grief that, you know, people had accused you of being certain things or doing certain things and you know, nobody knew about this diagnosis?
Yeah, all of that, I guess. Because, you know, I've got to where I am, but it was a big struggle. And people sort of say, well, you haven't done too badly. And you think, no, but it was really, really difficult. And I think it's just, yeah, you kind of, it's there's two parts to what I see very often is when people are diagnosed in adulthood, you're not just dealing with ADHD, you're now dealing with the shame of a lifetime of being misunderstood. So there's kind of this baggage piece. And so that has to be worked through. Whereas if it's caught young, if you've got the right support structures, you know, and parents and teachers around you who understand, you're just dealing with the symptoms of ADHD. Mm. And that's why it's really important to get the message out there, because ADHD, it's so poorly named. It's not a deficit of attention. It's actually a surplus of attention. And it's just about being able to put your attention where it needs to be at any given time.
But you also feel it's not a disorder either.
It's not a disorder.
Yeah.
It's you know, you'd have heard this kind of language more and more about neurodiversity. You know, 10% of the population will be considered neurodivergent, dyspraxia, autism, dyslexia, ADHD. So I don't consider it to be a disorder at all. There are actually so many strengths and positives to it, but you have to know about it. You have to be able to harness it.
Do you think now, having had your diagnosis, that it allows you, forget the past as in, like obviously, as you said, there's grief and everything, but in terms of looking forward, do you now have tools that will help you manage the future better? Or is it an internal thing where you'll understand your own future better?
It's both, I guess. I mean, I was very fortunate. You know, I have to suppose thank Dr. Google. I just probably Googled ADHD and came across an absolutely amazing ADHD coach, Heather Blackmore. And I worked with her on and off for 3 years. And that really, I suppose, just, you know, turned things around for me. So, you know, so much so that I actually went and studied to do it myself. But it is also that kind of internal self-compassion piece that you can look back and say, oh, you know, that's why certain things happen that way, and you understand it, and you can move on from it then. You know?
Because the text says, what's the benefit to diagnosis? I'm an adult who feels like these things ring true, but I don't know if it's worth the bother of finding out. But as you said, there are many reasons why
There are many reasons why, for various reasons, I've had, I think, 3 diagnoses at this stage. There's a real shortage of practitioners in this area. So it's kind of just been to do with clinicians maybe, stopping practicing. And even with 3 diagnoses, I still have days where I think, oh, you don't really have this and you're just lazy or whatever. But having it allows me to counter that. And so for that reason alone, it's that self-compassion piece you talk about. It is very important that you can kind of say, and it's not an excuse. That's important to say. You can't get diagnosed with ADHD and then sort of say, okay, great, now everybody has to work around me.
Yeah.
But it's a powerful explanation. And when people talk about labels, I agree, labels are unhelpful, but it's not a label, it's a lens. It's saying, look at me through the lens of ADHD. Don't look at me and expect, everything to be as it is for you.
Mm. What are the practical things that you now do to help yourself? If say you are thinking, oh, wow, I can feel a big procrastinating session coming on here, or I really am finding it difficult to focus and I've got all this work to do. What are the practical things you can do to help yourself?
So practically for me, I don't sit at my desk and type anymore. I have sort of voice dictation software. So it's amazing. Children actually know what to do. And as a child, I would have walked around my bedroom if I needed to learn something off by heart. And then you stop doing that because you go into an office and we're all meant to kind of sit there and not move. So now that I have the freedom because I work for myself, I walk around if I need to kind of get a lot of paperwork out. Exercise, I'm sure it just sounds like the oldest trick in the book, but what we're short of is dopamine and adrenaline. And so if you can go out, even if it's just a walk, it's absolutely amazing. Mm. As far as I'm concerned, it's the best medication for ADHD.
Weren't you a sprinter in school? And that was one of the things you think that maybe gave you those dopamine and adrenaline releases when you needed them when you were younger?
Yeah, I was. And it's interesting. There is some research to suggest that actually a lot of sort of high level athletes may have this unknowing. But yeah, one stage in 6th year, I was probably training 6 days a week. And I look back now and I think about the 2 hours after training when I had this amazing ability to focus that it just wasn't there the rest of the time.
So, right.
Yeah.
Isn't there a possibility that, ADHD and, any of the other conditions that you mentioned there, isn't that, rather than them being disorders in inverted commas, is it not just a sign that the structures and institutions and ways we have of learning and working don't suit as many people as we feel they should? That there are especially so many young children now coming through who just don't fit in to the 30 people in a classroom looking up at the blackboard structure that we've had in place, that their minds, their bodies, everything about them is craving another way of doing things.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Dermot. That's exactly what I would say. This isn't a disorder. It's an environmental disability or it's an environmental disorder. There are some people that would say if you go back to sort of prehistoric times, ADHD, we were the hunters. None of you were getting any meat if it wasn't for us. We were the ones going out, doing all the exciting stuff. So I think that is the case. The world isn't kind of built now for that type of a brain. And the reason it's so important to raise awareness is that people with ADHD need to have the knowledge and just the self-compassion to advocate, to take up space on their own terms.
Well, what you're doing today, as you said, because you heard it somewhere, you read it somewhere, and it was a light bulb moment for you. I'm really feeling from the text coming in and thinking about people listening today, it will hopefully be a light bulb moment for so many more people. Well, stay where you are, Mairead, because Mairead will stay with us, but also Ken Kilbride, who is the CEO of ADHD Ireland, is going to join us in a couple of minutes' time to talk about what the work that they do and the diagnosis process and all that. So stay tuned. It's Dermot and Dave on Today FM.
Now we're talking about ADHD. Mairead Deevy there has just been telling us her story of how she was diagnosed as an adult and how it has completely sort of transformed her perspective on her old self and her new self. And Ken Kilbride is from ADHD Ireland. He's on the line too. Hello, Ken.
Hi, how's it going? You're very well.
Great here. Dermot chatting to you. Dave is here as well, of course. Is ADHD something you can have a little bit of, or is it kind of like being a little bit pregnant? Is there a sliding scale, in terms of how much you might have?
I am, but I obviously, just before I begin, I'd like to congratulate whoever selected that music, because Justin Bieber has ADHD.
Oh, right. That's a coincidence, I can assure you. I did not know that. Yeah.
And Justin Timberlake, to throw him in as well.
Right.
So both of Justins.
Yeah, so of creative types.
A lot of creative types. And, just generally, the creative industries around the world are fueled by ADHD. I could list off, you know, Will Smith, Will I Am, Ryan Gosling, Emma Watson, hundreds of people that you know have ADHD. Just to take an example, you know, you go to a comedy show. We all have media comedy shows in Europe, but you know, we talk about the Ferrari brain that goes with ADHD. You know, the comedian asks the person at the top row, "What did you do today?" Ask the person in the middle row, "Where do you work?" Ask someone down the back what they did last night. All of a sudden, they weave this into a story. And most comedians have ADHD. And so there is a lot of positive and strengths that go with the condition. A lot of people use it. But in terms of being a little bit pregnant with ADHD, no. It's one of those conditions that you're born with, and it affects you across your lifespan. So what we know in Ireland is, you know, we say there's a 5% prevalence rate for children and 3% for adults. So we know the symptoms do persist into adulthood. But, you know, as Mae was saying there, you know, do we all forget our keys? Do we all, you know, get bored coming to the end task? We all do that. But what you know for adults, and particularly when they're undiagnosed, you know, there's higher rates of marital breakdown, higher rates of unemployment, higher rates of accidents, maybe, you know, typically there's higher rates of anxiety and depression. So it's not one of these childhood conditions, and it has serious impacts when it goes into adulthood.
Yeah, I have a friend with ADHD, and he's often posted things that have been very interesting on his Instagram. One of them was something called the ADHD iceberg, and it was just a visual where the tip of the iceberg was, you know, forgetfulness and difficulty in focusing on tasks. But then underneath the water was just a list of, you know, so many difficulties that you don't associate with ADHD, but yet that's what people with ADHD are dealing with all the time.
Well, they're all dealing with it all the time, and that's the thing. And Mairead was, you know, was talking about there, and just from our side, just want to say thanks to Mairead for coming along and, you know, giving that talk today, because, you know, she's tremendous. But what you find is, you know, and Mairead was mentioning there, particularly around girls and women, and girls are much better socially masking than boys. And there's an old saying, you know, boys externalize, girls internalize. And, you know, we run a support group for adults. And if we got a euro for every woman that came along with, you know, in her probably early 40s, saying, I've been on, you know, anxiety and depression medication for the last 20 years. I've just found out I've adult ADHD. You know, we'd be a wealthy organization.
Right.
I'm not saying, you know, when you look at the figures, you're looking about, you know, 105 to 150,000 people out there in Ireland today with a condition. How many are diagnosed? We simply don't know.
Yeah, well, actually, that's interesting you should say that, Ken, because there's a question in, says, I admire your guest, Mairead, coming on to talk about her diagnosis. Our daughter was diagnosed with ASD, ADHD falls under this. Through my journey of advocating for her, I find so many comparisons. I've not been diagnosed, but instinctively feel I have ADHD, which in turn I find a struggle to control my daughter. Is it the blind leading the blind, and will a diagnosis help?
Oh, we'd say absolutely. You know, we get about 3,000 calls per year now. And we've noticed over the last couple of years, you know, half our calls are now coming from adults. And they're just simply looking, you know, where do I go to get a diagnosis? And the biggest cohort within those are people saying, my child has just been diagnosed with ADHD. I was exactly the same in school when I was younger. I think I too might have ADHD. Mm. And what we do know from, you know, all the international research is that, you know, once you get the assessment, and I do need to preface the words here, get the right treatment, life outcomes improve. So we would say to anyone, when you're age 58 or 88, if you think it's ADHD, go get the assessment done.
And what's the diagnostic process like, Ken?
It's done by clinical observation. So they will use what's called rating scales, you know, which is basically a sort of 60 multi-choice questions. But they do, as Mairead was saying there, you need to be able to show it existed from childhood. So, you know, typical things there you might be asked is, you know, do you have your school reports still up in the attic, you know, where they say, you know, John found it hard to focus in class, or Mary didn't pay attention today, or your parents might be able to help that. So once you get that, you know, it is a process. It can be done quite quickly, but there is a lack of clinicians out there in both the public and the private sector to do it at the moment.
Right. And do you think there's, among adults, there's a reluctance to go for a diagnosis that people are pretty sure will come because of a fear of the stigma attached with ADHD?
Yes, but that has been changing, to be honest. You know, if you take, for example, you know, when I started in this role 5 years ago, you know, we weren't getting calls, but, you know, we're doing 7 awareness talks this week, you know, and 2 schools are part of that. So people are now calling us that weren't calling us 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's been huge work done around, you know, particularly neurodiversity in the workplace. And, you know, it's not quite there yet, but it is, we're at the crest of a wave. We're at the start of that wave.
And just, I think for people as well listening, just to kind of recap on the signs and the behaviours associated with it, because I think people are probably still going, I'd like to hear more about that just so I can kind of not self-diagnose by listening to Dermot and Dave, but at least get some clues and maybe follow up with an organisation like yourself. So can you go through kind of the list of behaviours and signs that you might be familiar with?
So again, we have all this information on our website on ADHD.ie, but basically there's three main behaviours associated with ADHD. One is mentioned is the attention deficit, and Lorraine said there, she's absolutely right. People with ADHD have the same level of focus as us. It's the inability to retain attention. So when you find your mind wandering off, you know, you're thinking about 42 different things at one time. And the other main behaviour is impulsivity, you know, not taking turns in conversations, things like that. And then there's the hyperactivity, which is on the go, driven by emotion all the time. And as Brave was also saying, the most common is the combined presentation where you get all those behaviors together. So when you get those together and they're causing you difficulty in your life, then it becomes ADHD.
Okay, and ADHDIreland.ie, you said, is the website. Mairead is still with us. Mairead, you are starting this kind of life coaching, ADHD coaching now, aren't you, as well?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you need a microphone.
Yeah, so during the first lockdown, when everything kind of ground to a halt, you know, the courts pretty much stopped operating, I decided to sort of take the plunge and go and study as a life coach. But I would say that market is probably quite saturated at this stage. So it was always with the view to this specific ADHD coaching, which is what I would have had. So I am sort of, I'm about half of the way through that ADHD studies. It's, you do it through New York. It's kind of the only place you can do it in the world. And yeah, so I have started seeing people. And I guess I agree with Ken that things have moved on an awful lot. And I think it is, I think language is so important. You know, the words we use create worlds. So we are moving away from disorder. But what I find when I'm working with people, and the reason I agreed to come on today, is that in certain industries, my industry, the legal industry, doctors, you know, anybody who is in a profession where to show vulnerability can be seen as weakness, they are not likely to come out. And I've worked with some absolutely amazing people, and their ADHD is their strength, because, and it's the same with me. If I'm in court, and you know, particularly with sort of jury advocacy, I'm hyper focused. There's nothing else going on, but it's that support around the rest of it.
And what's your website then, if people want to get in touch?
So the website is still progress, but if they go to sparkcoaching.ie, my email address is there, so they can just reach
start
out
that way.
Sparkcoaching.ie.
Ken Kilbride from ADHD Ireland, Mairead Deevy, thank you very much for both of you for coming in. Mairead, thank you for sharing your story. I know it'll help a lot of people.
Dermot and Dave, weekdays from 9 a.m.